This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Bloggers get a chance to weigh in on everything from hard news to pop culture. And today we've got three folks ready to weigh in on Gennaro Wilson. He's been released after 2 years behind bars for a teen sex conviction. Plus, a Tupac statue gets trashed and Barack Obama's efforts to defuse a controversy involving gay rights and gospel may have just made matters worse. With me on our Bloggers Roundtable, Earl Dunavant. He blogs at Prometheus6.org and cultural commentary. Liza Saboteur. She publishes the community blog Culture Kitchen, plus Theo Johnson. He blogs and hosts a podcast on TheoJohnson.net. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's move on to Gennaro Wilson. On Friday, the Georgia Supreme Court decided to release him. He received a mandatory sentence of at least 10 years without parole for having oral sex with a girl 2 years younger than he was. He was convicted of felony aggravated child molestation in 2005, but the law changed in 2006. Now that charge would be a misdemeanor with a maximum 1 year sentence. And after a year of appeals, Gennaro Wilson is free.
I've been very confused for the most part, you know, not knowing what to expect from all the disappointments we dealt with early on. But, you know, I'm finally, you know, happy to see that we've got justice now.
Liza, the district attorney who prosecuted Wilson, said that he disagreed with the court's decision, although the law did change before his conviction. After his conviction, do you think that he should have served the 10 years?
Oh, God, no. Absolutely not. I find it very disturbing that, you know, we're in 2007 and we are living in a society that still doesn't want to acknowledge that teenagers do have sex and that, you know, we need to basically create an environment in which they do what they're going to do safely. So, I was appalled, like many other people, by, you know, even the fact that he had been thrown in jail for basically having consensual sex.
Earl, there are other young men who are still in jail for the same reasons. Should there be a widespread examination of this and taking a look at whether or not this is actually fair, given the change in the law?
Well, I understand from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and, you know, I had to go back and read up on this, and it seems there's like less than 60 people who were jailed for this very same crime who were under 18 at the time. Now, if their partner was 12 or 11, I'm happy leaving them in jail, okay? But I think that this case, I mean, the law had already been changed. They knew that they didn't want to make this such a severe crime, and it was simply an oversight that kept oral sex out of that bill. So I think it's quite reasonable to let this young man go, to review the other cases that are similar, okay, and just have some common sense, for Christ's sake. It's like Liza said, teenagers are having sex, and it's their bodies are changing. Mm-hmm. You can't expect a 15, 16-year-old, fully physically mature person to untrain mentally to resist their hormones.
Let me get Theo in here. It's one thing to have urges. It's another thing to act on them. There's been a lot of discussion of whether or not this was appropriate, given that the girl may not have been, let's put it this way, as fully conscious as she should have been, that they were partying. Is that something that should factor into this whole equation?
You know, I really think it should, in a sense, because one of the things that really, in reading, I had to go back and, you know, read some extra information on this, but one of the things I found was that, you know, they were recording all of this and whether or not they were drinking, we all understand the effects of alcohol and what it does. And, you know, it's unfortunate that something like this would happen and, like, this young man would be put in prison for that. But I just really, you know, I agree with everyone else. I just hate that it happened to him. This young man was a great student. He was a star athlete. And he definitely had a really, you know, and a future. And for now, I mean, 4 years of his life is just gone. Yeah. And seeing him come out of prison, and I was really impressed with his attitude. I mean, he could have helped. He could have easily been upset and disappointed. He could have easily, said a lot of negative things about the justice system, but he says he still believes in it. And I think he's an example for especially all young men. We really need to be start talking to the young men about sex and about some of the consequences of it. And
the implications of this, especially for young women, for, you know, teenage girls, teenage women, basically, it really has a wider repercussion in terms of their being able to exact their right to choose and their individuality even though they're teenagers, but as human beings. And so it raises a lot of issues, especially with parents saying that they have the right to put somebody in jail, even though, mm-hmm. you know, the teenagers were having consensual sex. So it has a far-reaching far-reaching repercussions in terms of how the kind of legal environment that we're creating for teenagers. I honestly believe that we really need to stop calling them children if they're 15, 16, 17 and really create a specific category for that age group.
All right, I want to reintroduce everyone and move on to another topic. This is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We were just hearing from Liza Saboteur, publisher of the community blog Culture Kitchen. We've also got Earl Dunavant. He blogs at Prometheus6.org and Intrapolitics.org. And Theo Johnson, who blogs and hosts a podcast on TheoJohnson.net. Got to move to Obama and the gay controversy. This thing just has legs and keeps going on and on. So Barack Obama and Donnie McClurkin are all over the blogosphere.
Oh, Lord.
The Obama campaign invited gospel singer Donnie McClurkin to their gospel concert tour. And McClurkin talks about fighting his own desires for men and what he calls, quote, the curse of homosexuality. Now the Illinois senator and presidential hopeful has added an openly gay minister, Reverend Andy Seiden, to the program. But that move may have made the critics even hotter. Theo, was this a last-minute smart move or not so smart?
I really think it wasn't that smart of a move. I know you can't please everyone all the time. And the thing is this is a gospel concert, a gospel tour. So of course most of the people within the tour, I heard Mary was going to be there. They usually feel the same way about gay rights and that. So I think it kind of concerns me because I hope he's not like this if he does get elected and does get the nomination. I mean, I hope he doesn't try to please everyone at the same time because it's just not going to work. It's not going to be, in my opinion, effective policy if he tries that kind of method.
Mm-hmm. So, Liza, there's this one minister, Reverend Seiden, who was added, and there have been other gay rights advocates who've, you know, been asked to come on board for this. But there are other groups, including a group led in part by Keith Boykin, who's former Clinton administration official, African-American blogger, mm-hmm. gay, who are like, no, that's not enough. How do you break down on that?
You know, what I heard was that this is through the grapevine, that they actually were given a list of people and they overlooked it. I don't remember the names on the list that I saw, but, this is one in a series of really bad tactical decisions by the Obama campaign, and this is not just this one case. I mean, I honestly don't understand the people who are behind these decisions. I mean, they've done, they haven't really done much in terms of outreaching women's groups, for example. And, you know, Obama is supposed to be polling really absolutely fantastic with, you know, women from all the political spectrum. I agree with Keith. I mean, he really needs to get the guy out and do some soul-searching on this. But they always try to kind of, like, you know, put some dressing on it and walk it off.
Yeah. Well, Earl, this is not one of those things you can walk off.
We're talking about a fundraising concert in South Carolina. South Carolina is being called the Black Primary. Right. It's this contest where there's, you know, by factors of, you know, tenfold more African Americans in the state than in states like New Hampshire and Iowa that also make up the early primary race. Mm-hmm. Is this a case where the senator's campaign office just really was trying too hard to fit into a Southern Black Christian culture? Was there any, were there other decisions that could have been made to try to boost, you know, political responsiveness in a state like South Carolina without putting his campaign in that position?
Well, he actually, there are any number of gospel singers who simply would not have raised the issue. Okay, he just needs a little thought there. And in fact, I do think he made the matters a bit worse because he's fallen victim to what I think of as additive morality. It's like you've got this bad thing, so you just add a good thing on top of it, removing the bad thing, and they sort of balance out and neutralize. It doesn't work that way, and he just found that out.
Well, let's move on to a Tupac statue and a noose. Another incident reported this week. It was around the neck of a statue of Tupac. The Tupac Amaru Shakur Center for the Arts in Stone Mountain, Georgia. Spokesperson says vandals, among other acts, threw a noose around the neck of the Shakur statue. The police say the rope wasn't a noose, but it was an orange nylon string with a wooden cross attached. So the incident is not being investigated by them as a hate crime. There was a whole rash of these noose incidents. And is this something, Liza, do you think that this is continuing in the same vein, or this is just some random act of vandalism? What about the controversy over whether it was or wasn't a noose? How do you make sense of this?
You know, I think that in a lot of ways, it, people are saying, you know, F it, let's just use this as a perfect prank to get attention. But I think it's an act of hatred, the statue itself. Did you see it?
Why didn't you tell us?
It doesn't look like him.
Tell us a little bit about the statue. I've heard a lot of criticism of what the statue actually looks like, which is why you're laughing.
It looks nothing like him. I mean, I am trying to figure out who does it look like, but nothing at all. It has this weird facial hair going on there that just, I don't know. Kind of looks like Uncle Ben's, but, you know, rocking a really good goatee.
That's pretty harsh, Earl. Theo, what do you think? What do you think of the statue?
Of the statue?
Yes. Did you take a look?
There's
been a lot of criticism, and we can go back to the news thing in a second. But there's been a lot of criticism of whether the statue itself looks like Tupac Shakur.
I don't know what Tupac looks like anymore. It's been a long time. Okay. I mean, honestly, I stopped buying anything involving Tupac when he died.
Yeah. But you know the way I look at it. Obviously, someone had to approve it, and, you know, if his mom likes it, then that's all that matters. So,
well, yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't look like it. I agree. That's not the
Tupac. I think she was strong-armed. She was giving something
Maybe
in the Kool-Aid.
We'll have a picture of the Tupac statue for anyone who wants to make their own judgments on our blog, nprnewsandviews.org. Let's go back to the news thing, though, Theo. Are we noosed out in the sense that these incidents are not having the same resonance news-wise? Are people still concerned about this succession of incidents, regardless of whether you think they're extremely serious or pranks?
I think I really do believe, because it was maybe the Tupac, the statue of Tupac, that maybe they didn't look at it as being as serious, especially because, you know, you had the different sayings. It was a string with a cross or just an orange string. So I guess it depends on what your definition of a noose is. And, you know, as we, you know, if you look at some of the other previous incidents, like in Gina, Louisiana, that was actually a noose, you know, a rope. And so maybe they just didn't take it as seriously. I don't know. I actually received an email on this on the 25th from I don't know if you guys get emails from Dr. Mike, but he has a YouTube video on it. And he says there were some other things that happened also, like racial racial handbills were on the base, and the base of the statue was broken. So, you know, I don't know how much of that is true, but it sounds like not all of the information is getting out there. So,
well, there's another aspect to this, which is that Stone Mountain, Georgia, is also home to a Confederate memorial, and there's another set of statues there, and there's also some indications that the Klan operate in and out of Stone Mountain. Earl, does that put a spin on this for you?
Well, I don't know. I think it's going to be hard to get this done as like a hate crime, regardless of the Klan being in the area. But I think there was hate involved. What I'd rather do, actually, than pursue hate crime legislation is pursue domestic terrorism legislation. Because you cannot deny hanging a noose on someone's door is a terroristic act. Okay, there's a lot of discussion about whether it's emotion or blah, blah, blah. No, it is not a hate crime. It is domestic terrorism. We can recognize it. We have laws on the books to deal with it as such if we choose to see it as such rather than as some minor dispute over, you know, some black people getting upset over a piece of rope, which I have heard. Okay? I mean, I've been reading stuff on the net about this noose thing. It's incredible. One guy, like, 20 nooses in a nation of 300 million people?
Right.
Well, let me go to you, Liza. The NAACP has declared a state of emergency in response to the increase in reports of violence and prosecution against African Americans. Also, they say there's not enough investigation of hate crimes. Would you say that this is something that should be added as a possible hate crime to investigate? How do you choose what to push or not to push in regards to hate crimes?
Well, you know, in this particular case, I mean, we can investigate it, but I'm torn because at the same time that, you know, like Earl says, you know, this visual is really, you know, in itself a terrorist act. At the same time, we have the situation, like, for example, the fires out in L.A., San Diego, and, you know, being used as an excuse to basically terrorize immigrants, whether legally documented or not. And so we have a whole rash of different kinds of hate crimes or terrorist acts, whatever you want to call it, around the country that we really need to look at more closely.
Lady and gentlemen, we got to let you go. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Liza Sabatour, who publishes the community blog Culture Kitchen. She joined us from our NPR studios in New York. Also, Earl Dunavant blogs at Prometheus6.org, and Theo Johnson, who blogs on theojohnson.net, and he joined us from member station KERA in Dallas.